piece is that actually we always have a lot of interest in doing the piece and comparing the reactions of men and women mm-hmm. to the piece. We find it's really, really exciting because in effect, I don't know, I mean, this is open to discussion from the girls. In some sense, it seems that women, of course, women react much more strongly, either by being far more threatened than the men, or being far more turned on and saying, yeah, there are possibilities for
me.
They're
much more extreme about it, where a man will come in and he'll say, yeah, wow, I know what you were talking about, and leave it at that, whereas a woman will either say, what the hell were you talking about, or they'll say, oh, you're really right. I can't believe it. You know?
They identify very strongly with it.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, I mean, women will just freak out at the piece.
Although many men I have spoken to said that in one way or another they had experienced similar types of experiences in their youth.
Yeah.
You know, not identical, of course.
Sure.
But the same type of masking and not being accepted when they wanted to be accepted.
Sure. And then for them to find out that women go through that was like a really mind-blowing experience for them. We realized that, wow, we really are a community.
Right.
We are human beings and that we can share and that we have similar problems. Whereas from childhood, we're all taught that a boy and girl are different.
Right.
And that they should remain that way, and that girls should look up to the boys and eventually grow to be women that look up to the men for their source of strength and for their source of direction, when in actuality we're both going through very similar changes and crises, and in fact that it should be something where you share, and it's not a matter of somebody just dictating to the other, but a matter of sharing.
Yeah.
You know,
also,
I think
in relation to that, with just on a woman-to-woman relationship, I think...
Really?
Getting back to how I personally responded to the project, I think that if these women had been able to talk about these incredible splits they had within themselves to other women and realize
that they weren't so alone.
That they weren't so alone. And this is very important to me, to deal with everyone in the group and to realize that I do have problems that aren't just my own, that are a woman's problem. And that it is so important for women to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
of course.
And not have this incredible sense of rivalry and jealousy.
And
just being able to get a man and hold a man and have a home. That's the most important thing in life. It isn't that you have six wonderful women friends. You know, it's like, do you have a man? Do you have... Do you go out? I mean...
Yeah.
I think that women have to get over the guilt of not having a man because it's not their fault. It mm-hmm. is not their fault. And they must realize, as I've realized, that you don't have to conform to what... To get a date, you don't have to conform to some guy that you really don't like. But if you don't get out, you don't feel you're a woman. You don't feel that you're going to make anything out of your life. And that you marry somebody because they happen to be around. You're 29... If you pass the age of 30, you're never going to get married. You'll be an old maid. I mean, maybe that's not such a bad alternative. Who knows? But I think that the openness to alternatives is what's really been important.
Yes, and if you can get over the incredible distortion of that need, I've got to get married, I've got to, you know, fulfill this role, this thing. If you can get over that franticness of it, you know, your life may turn out simpler anyway, because if you're not screaming for that all the time, you can take care of the rest of your life. You're going to be a more whole person. You're going to have more to offer to everybody, men, women, children, the whole world. And, you know, if enough people could take the time and relax enough to do that, you know, there'd be more whole people around to share with each other.
Yes, I know in my background... In my high school, if you didn't go out with 10 million people, there was something definitely wrong with you. That's how you were rated. How many people did you go out with last weekend? It didn't matter if you liked them.
Oh, it was...
Didn't matter at all, just as long as you could say, I went out with 50,000 people. You know, this ridiculous game that was played, and that I know I myself fell right into.
Right.
Social butterfly.
You had to.
And if you go out with so-and-so, then you'll meet his friends. It doesn't matter that... You don't like him, you know. You're going to meet his friends, and then you'll get invited to other parties.
Yeah.
And you'll meet more people. Well, of course, that's true of people in general, but it shouldn't be for any end that
yeah,
you
the
become
emphasis doesn't
friendly
have
with
to
someone.
Be that strong. You
I know.
That shouldn't be the main focal point
it's
of your existence.
It's balance. You know, like we're taught so much that for a woman to be a woman and to self-assert herself, she needs to have a man, which is what Peggy's been saying. And a big, you know, since I've been with Muses, I think a big change that was in my life was until I had really, like, sat down and really, like, talked out my life with all of the women in the show and really sat down and saw all these women, I used to feel that I wasn't anything unless I was living with a man, mm-hmm. right? And I had been living with a really lovely person for a long time, but I was very unhappy. But I felt that if I left him, I would be failing because, you know, I would be failing as my purpose as being me. When I realized I wasn't happy, and I did reach a point where we had an enormous fight, and I actually sat there with a razor blade, right, in the bathroom for about 2 hours. And I looked in the mirror, and I knew, when I looked at my eyes, that there was more to me than just this person walking around in that kitchen cooking meals. And I said, but it's nothing to kill myself over. What am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, I said, wait a second. And I had reached a point a couple of times before. Another time when I had had an abortion, I had really gone through a big crisis over that, feeling I'd failed by getting pregnant. I felt I'd failed by getting pregnant, realizing I was a woman. I said, wait, oh, my body, oh, let me get rid of it, you know. But and then I realized to get rid of my body would mean getting rid of me altogether. I said, wait a second. And it just, I had to realize that for me, for Christine at this point, the self-assertion, most positive self-assertion I could have for myself was to have the pleasure of being with me and not feeling that I had to have somebody behind me or beside me totally and completely to make Christine a whole person. That I can be with myself in a room and be Christine and not feel that I had to depend on the fact that I had somebody waiting there for me, yeah. you know? And it just was like an amazing realization, you know, and it just... It blew my mother's mind because for so many years, Mom has lived for my father totally and completely. And it's only been recently, after 25 years of marriage, that my mother has accepted that she's a woman and she has talents. And she's doing something about it. And I knew I wasn't going to wait for 25 years of marriage. And I'm really happy that I could discover it at this young age, that I'm a person, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm happy about it, you know. And I can't repeat that enough, because as you deal with Billy and as you deal with Marilyn and really see the pain that they went through, like, you know, like Billy, the two songs that she wrote, two of the songs that she wrote, Fine and Mellow and Billy's Blues, both of them talk about the fact that if her man wasn't there and if her man didn't do for her, she was nothing.
Also for Judy Garland.
And for Judy Garland especially,
at a very
too.
Young age, they yeah. started feeding her pills. Mm-hmm. Ups, downs. When it's time to sleep, have a down. When it's time to get up, have an up. Yeah. And that's the way she lived her childhood, so she could be a movie star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she too, turned to all her men to make her be Judy, to make her feel whole. She had to have a man there, even if it was totally against their art or totally against their art being that one avenue of self-assertion that they had opened to themselves. They would do everything to have it be turned away. Billy would give all her, everything to whatever man she was with. She'd turn over her whole career to them. They would completely handle it, run her whole life. She'd have to go places she didn't want to go, sing songs she didn't want to sing. Yet she was constantly trying to sing what she wanted to sing, but she would set up these blocks continually along the way. It's amazing, you know?
And the thing about it is they were all guilt feelings and reactions for not being the woman who was behind the man.
Yes.
For being.
Yes, yes.
They had to punish themselves
for
being assertive.
Billy had to punish herself for opening her mouth
like
and
a
singing.
Man. For being like a
life.
Man and asserting yourself as an individual and a whole person who can make it on their own,
yeah.
they had to punish themselves.
Sure.
They had to punish themselves over and over and over again.
Well, sure, there's the whole setup, you know? You can't get away from that. I mean, you're fed that from the day you're born, and you can't escape from that until you thoroughly acknowledge it and accept it. If you accept it as
and
part of yourself, then you can deal
it.
With it.
Yeah.
BAI, you're on the air.
Hi, it's a models program. I'm enjoying it very good.
Oh, so sorry.
I was at the Circle of the Square Theater on the 28th, And I heard you mention that you might have the tapes tonight.
Yes, uh-huh. We're going to go to those at about 3:30.
At about 3:30. Oh,
right.
Great. I'm waiting.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I wanted to say something about the whole idea of the suicide, the male and female thing. First, I want to say that one of the things that happened to us in the project, which we're still working on as human beings, the sympathy with other women and the sympathy with men. We mentioned in our show that we have a doll collage, and one day, because we're doing all the kinds of dolls that men expect women to be, and one day in rehearsal we just sat around and fantasized that if men were to do a show, all the kind of dolls that men would have to be, and you know, the super protective, super masculine doll, and the super achiever, you know, I can bring you home the bacon doll, and so on. And, you know, the show really made us realize in a tremendously sympathetic way that a lot of maybe our anger and pain and fear and so on was in the way of, you know, how much the setup, you know, is for both parties, for men and for women. And
yes, definitely.
It's one of the
definitely.
Beautiful things that we did realize in this, and then it went, and in terms of including men in our feelings, which is very, very important to all of us. As well, of course, as having sympathy for a lot of other women who maybe we didn't have sympathy for because of things like the competition factor and so on. In terms of the suicide thing that was mentioned, when Lynn said before about the men taking the more direct methods of suicide, the Phyllis Chesler book about men committing suicide more often and women doing it less often, but women attempt it more often, we use suicide in our show as a metaphor. And that's why, again, our response to suicide is so important. A metaphor for the fact that women are killing themselves all the time.
Yeah.
Of course, men are too, you know, given, you know, that we live in the whole idea of the industrial society and so on, which we're not going to go into now, but the fact that women are killing themselves all the time and that our women simply took the step. I mean, they took the one step, but in fact, it's a process. We didn't really... we feel after having done a lot of work on the show that the act of suicide isn't half so appalling, really. When you think about it, you say, wow, the act of suicide, you know, that's kind of a cop-out because you're saying to yourself, well, that doesn't occur to me because I'm here, you see, so therefore I'm not a suicide, so what does that have to do with me? And that's kind of a cop-out because the fact is the process of suicide has to do with everyone. The process of killing yourself off slowly, day by day, in one way or another.
Alcoholism, also.
Alcoholism, you know, compulsive behavior, self-destructing, all the kinds of things that you do. And the fact is that, of course, in women, in men, you look at self-destruction. You look at Dylan Thomas and you see he was an alcoholic poet and drank himself to death and so on, and you say, well, wow, there's a self-destructive man. What a shame.
Or Ernest Hemingway.
But in women, or Ernest Hemingway, because he put a gun in his mouth and blew his head off, and it's such an obvious act of anger. But in women, the suicidal process is a little bit less noticeable because it's so much more accepted. I mean, the fact of, you know, women not eating and throwing up food and you know, sort of being constantly diagnosed for malnutrition and so on, because being really skinny, I mean, skins and bones skinny, is vogue, you know, and it's bizarre and it's fashion magazines, so it's considered healthy when in fact it's a suicidal process. I mean, starving your body of food is a suicidal process, which is considered healthy. I mean, if a man did it in this society, he would be considered crazy. For a woman, it's considered healthy. Staying at home and not working is a suicidal process. Any man who lived in a house with the doors and windows closed, you know, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, would be considered very unhealthy, bordering on insane. Whereas a woman who does something like this, which is obviously part of the suicidal process, is considered healthy. She is considered well-adjusted. She is considered
happy.
Serving her society. That's the freak-out. The fact that something which is so obviously a suicidal process, which we have, you know, which we've found out through our work, is ordained by society as the thing women do. That's the thing that really, really blows your mind.
I think we have time for one more call. There's someone hanging on here that I'd like to go to. BAI, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been listening for the past 2 hours or so. It's been very interesting, and I'm very interested in hearing the poems that Marilyn did.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We'll get them out. Do you have any other questions while we're getting them out?
Do you have them with us?
Also, when you say what people saw in Marilyn, I don't understand how anyone who could see Bus Stop couldn't see, you know, how much she was trying and how successful she was.
Well, that's very interesting you mentioned that, I'll tell you, because one thing about that, it absolutely insane about that, is that, of course, Bustop was her totally own creation, much more so than Misfits, because she'd just gotten back from studying with Lee Strasberg in New York, and she totally conceived that part from an actress's point of view in every way, even to the point of striking her costume and going into the warehouses of the studio and finding a costume that she felt suited the character. And Bosley Crowther's review, as well as everybody else's review of that film, is absolutely priceless, because over and over again, we have references, I think we have the review right here, to how Josh Logan worked such a miracle by getting a performance out of Marilyn Monroe. And it's just absolutely incredible. He says, hold on to your chairs. Marilyn Monroe has finally proved herself an actress in Bus Stop. And then he says, for the striking fact is that Mr. Logan has got her to do a great deal more than wiggle and pout and pop her big eyes and play the synthetic vamp in this film. He has got her to be the beat-up B-girl of Mr. Inge's play. He has got her to be the tinseled floozy. He has got her to be the semi-moronic doll who was found in a Phoenix clip joint. On and on and on about how Josh Logan has got her to be these things. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. This is the review that she got for that film from the New York Times. So, I mean, it's frightening, the setup that was against her.
Yeah, she was totally undercut there.
The mentality of people who don't understand why blind people can't see.
Yeah, it's true.
Self-righteousness behind it, the undermining self-righteousness. I really want to hear some of those poems.
I think we've located some.
Yeah, we only have
one. Then what we'll do is say goodbye to you and hear the poems.
Fine. Okay. Thanks, and thanks for putting it together in this way.
Come and see us at the show.
Is it every night or is it on
Sunday? Yeah, every night this week.
Every night this week.
Till Sunday.
At 8 o'clock, and you should call in.
And make reservations.
Make reservations?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Spread the news.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I left my home of green rough wood, a blue velvet couch. I dreamed till now a shiny dark bush just left of the door. Down the walk, clickety-clack, as my doll and her carriage went over the cracks. We'll go far away. Don't cry, my doll. Don't cry. I hold you and rock you to sleep. Hush, hush, I'm pretending now. I'm not your mother who died. Help. 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 I feel life coming closer when all I want is to die. Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, poor baby.
Ah, wow.
I thank you all for coming here and for bringing us all of this information and
thank you.
Beauty and everything. And how long will Disquieting Muses be going on?
Well, it might be going on for quite a while.
Well, this particular run, the Disquieting Muses, is going on every day in everybody's lives.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. That's true. Our run, we open tomorrow night at St. Clement's at 8 o'clock, and we'll play every night this week at 8 p.m., Saturday at 7 and 10, until next Sunday.
And Sunday at 8.
St. Clement's.
Sunday at 8. Theater at St. Clement's, West 46th Street. But it's true what the girl said about it going on every day in everybody's life, because that's where it's at.
When I mentioned to someone that we were having the combination of the suicides of women artists and the text of the three Marias who are now on trial for having written the new Portuguese letters, I said, well, that's another alternative. Prison.
Yeah,
that's true.
And,
definitely. And then again, all of these women were imprisoned.
Trapped in a bell jar.
You know, Billy with her Lady Day, and in her life, and Norma Jean with Marilyn, and Deanne with her pictures. And
our society is a prison.
Yeah.
And
everybody.
For everybody, and that's the important thing to realize.
Yeah. The frightening, you see, the reason there is an alternative is that it only becomes truly frightening when you internalize the prison.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
True.
Totally internalize it, and then it seems no hope.
And accept it.
And you see bars between you and that mirror.
Yeah.
And that's when it's really frightening, when you feel really separated from your own self that's looking back at you.
If you can really realize where that prison is at and where the messed up heads are that made it, then you can just... You can't open the door and walk out.
Yeah.
this tape that we have from Women on Trial, which was performed January 28th at Circle in the Square by Carol Cole, Tammy Grimes, and Zoe Caldwell, is something that I feel I should put a disclaimer before, because throughout the tape you'll hear a buzz similar to a bad TV mm-hmm. as you're watching it, and it's really unfortunate because it was a marvelous production, but the information and the content of what these women have written is the important thing, and we felt that was more important to put on than perfectly airable, broadcastable material. What happened to cause this buzz is very interesting. We arrived at the theater having been given no help by the men at the station here in the way of equipment. They finally decided that one mic would do, where at least six were needed, and another man couldn't be bothered to give us tape, and it just went on and on and got more and more bizarre. And we arrived at the place and were met immediately by a member of the stagehands union, who said, "Why, you can't tape here anyway." We said, "Well, it's just as well. We have no tape, and no, we had very little tape, and we had almost no equipment." And we decided to hook into a system that had been set up by Barbara Buckner, doing a videotape of the whole setup. And it just went on and on. They had been fighting all day with the Stagehands Union, and it was just one of the most bizarre things I'd ever encountered, all this protest. I mean, here it was, the first international feminist protest action in support of these of the Three Marias, the Portuguese women who had written what you're about to hear. And we were being fought every step of the way
by men.
It's fascinating because I do not politically consider myself a feminist for reasons that we won't go into, but it certainly was enough to make one such a thing. So buzz and all, I'd like to go to Women on Trial.
Because all literature is a long letter to an invisible other, present or possible, to one who may become a present or future passion that we may obliterate or nourish or seek to find. And it has already been said that it is not the object that matters, but the intention. And above all, it is the passion. And I say that it is not the passion that matters so much, it is the intention. But above all, it is the action. It will not be necessary, therefore, to ask ourselves what brings us together, whether what brings us together is the common passion of different actions or the common action of different passions. Because we shall ask ourselves only what manner of action we shall take, whether from painful yearning or from revenge. Yes, without doubt, yearning is a form of revenge, and revenge is a form of yearning. In both, we seek for that which will not cause us to turn back. We seek for that which will not cause us to destroy. But passion is the force, and action is its meaning. Only from our yearnings will we make a sisterhood, a convent, Sister Mariana of the Five Letters. Only from our revenge will we make an October, a May, a new month to cover the calendar. And of ourselves, what will we do? First letter three. You won, I say. So it is I who wins, and you who loses. For entrusting the victory, you neglect your vigilance over me while I am examining you. Coldly, what other way have I to examine things or others? With all my passion, that passion nourished by the simple pleasure or pain that I am given to feel. Like this I seek to find you, to use you, to write you. But words are not links. no bridges, no knots to untie in the solitude of the living room. In the living room, you wanted the three of us, attentive, embroidering the days with a habit of silence, soft-spoken, tender. But whether here or in the cloister of Béjar, which we refused, we will calmly, or by storm, suddenly tear off our garments and mount life as if we were men, they say. What will be left of us after this adventure? Love was never so true as that love which I have invented. This pleasure that I embrace, if I embrace you, your fingers moving slowly on arms, on thighs, on breasts. Ah, to what dizziness I give myself and stay there. In what rip scream I grapple and grow. I increase and grow. I go mad, and if suffices me or it suffices me not, and for this I invent you, reinvent you, make you and unmake you to my sustenance. Attention must be paid. The danger of wanting each other or of rejecting each other. You, man, owner, who rides me or intends to. And I, who seem to follow you in this game, consenting to it, but in reality refusing it. Already walking in labyrinths, others in torrid summers, indeed on my own trajectories. Because you are only interested in possessing me, I, your land, colony, your tree shadow program to calm the senses. Moreover, you want me cloistered in you. You, my only convent, my only ambition, finally, my only desert. You won, I say, and you think I won, but you have lost. Exposed, with no victory all these days. Our groin certain of taking the steps again. Seeing houses and causes again. Stirring up sleeping things. The constant choice, moments of insanity, or a tranquility held down heavier than what wakes and will not be conquered. We tear apart and shape letter by letter to your precise profile. We are female, faithful to our image, clothing our thirsty opposition. Women seeking no advantage but certain of the men we mount. Never the hunted prey, nor an object given, nor the willing smells of dry forests. Stained glass, we say. Stone, trod upon. Coming to be ourselves by boat or wind. Distant whirlwind turning on itself. This we use to achieve sustenance. Ancient strands in which we are separate from the others. And so close. The bleeding nun. Phantom who haunted the castle of Lindenburg, making it uninhabitable. It was a nun wearing a veil and a bloody gown. In one hand she carried a pickaxe, in the other a burning lantern. Spanish nun. She had left the convent to live with the lord of the castle. As unfaithful to her lover as she had been to her god, she betrayed him, but only came back to be in her turn betrayed by her accomplice, whom she wanted to marry. Her body was left without burial, and her soul without resting place wandered about one century. She begged for a little earth for her body and some prayers for her soul. The two things having been promised her, she disappeared.
Mother Abbess, here they sent me from the house of my parents,
There was no bread for us at the table of men. Our useless body to the Lord was bowed. In the house of the Lord we shall eat. In the house of the Lord we shall sleep. Maria de la Rao. Beautiful witch imprisoned at the age of 18. She began to practice her art at 10 and was led to the Sabbath for the first time by the sorcerer Marasans. After his death, the devil himself took her to the assembly, where, according to the testimony of Marie, she took the form of a tree, but appearing at times in the form of an ordinary man, sometimes red, sometimes black. Marie never kissed the devil, but she saw how that was done. She added that she liked very much the Sabbath because it seemed really like a marriage. The witches heard music so soft that it was as if they were in heaven, and the devil convinced them that the fire that burns eternally was not real, but artificial. Mother Abbess, here they send me from the house of my parents. There was no bread for us at the table of men. Our body of work to the Lord's we rent. With the money of the Lord's we shall eat. In the dung that remains we shall sleep. Mother Abbess, and what will we be with body and without cavalier? Sterile earth, mount of their empty battles, cheap labor. Where you rent your body, they will say, why not your strength? And where you rent your strength, they will say, why not your body? Our passion is the bread, our exercise is the world, our object are the lords of female workers and prostitutes. Demonic young woman who lived in 1598. Having lost the use of her limbs, she was taken for exorcism to the Church of a Sacred Redemptor. It was verified that she was possessed by 5 demons called wolf, cat, dog, doll, and griffin. 2 demons came out through her nose in the form of a ball the size of a fist. One red as fire, and the other completely black. The other demons left her less violently. Once outside her, the demons turned around the fire and disappeared. It was discovered that Francois Secretaire made the young lady swallow the demons, hiding them in a chunk of bread the color of dung. Marie Marigrand, witch who said to have seen several times the demon copulating with a great number of women, and that his technique was to approach the pretty women from the front and the ugly ones from behind. Mother Abbess, here they send me from the house of my parents. There was no bread for us at the table of men. If our body is able, the cavalier will love us. From the bread of the devil we shall eat. In the house of the devil we shall awaken. Mother Superior, and what will we be with body and cavalier?
Land of yours, mount of their empty battles, hands of lost laborers, where you cede to him your body, they will say, your body, our distance. Our passion will be the cavalier, our exercise the body, our object the world. We shall be mounts of the cavalier.
Gabrielle d'Estrées, mistress of Henry IV, dead in 1599. It is known that she tried to marry the king. She was pregnant for the 4th time and lived in the house of Zermette, famous man of finance. As she walked in the garden, she had a grave heart attack. She passed a bad night, and the next day she was assailed by such frightening convulsions that she turned completely black and her mouth twisted so that it ended up in the nape of her neck. She expired in the midst of great torment and horribly disfigured. Various people attributed to the devil this charitable act.
They said that the devil strangled her to avoid further scandal and inconveniences. And what shall we do, Mother Abbess? What shall we do? There was no bread for us at the table of man. If all the bodies were given in marriage, it would lose the value of money. The demand balances with the convent. The tedium for practice is embellished in the brothel, without lords, nor cavaliers, nor brothel, nor convent. Men are divided into men and lords. But over all women, all men are lords. In the houses of lords and men and cavaliers, we give them the meaning, because in opposition they define themselves. We give them the foundations and the thickness. Outside of these houses we shall wander. No house is ours. Nobody is our brother or sister. Of sorority, only the convent. Of solidarity, no one. Married and sold from ourselves. There was no bread for us at the table of man.
Cecilia. In the middle of the 16th century, a woman called Cecilia attracted attention in Lisbon. She possessed the art of modulating her voice in such a manner that it seemed to come out at times from her elbow, at other times from her feet, or yet again from another place that would be improper to name. She maintained a conversation with an invisible being that answered all her questions. The woman was reputed to be a witch and possessed of the devil. However, as a special grace, in place of being burned, she was only exiled forever in the island of St. Thomas, where she died in peace.
And what shall we do, Mother Abbess? What shall we do? I shall tell you what we shall do with body and with cavalier. Our passion will be the body, and exercise the world, and object the cavalier. Our strong body to the cavalier we shall give at night, but the body of the cavalier we shall take. The exchange will be broken at dawn. We shall say, "Cavalier, I want my body back in order to carry on my day." They will call you Amazon, but don't run from the world to hell. In the convent, you will love the cavalier. And of that you will give testimony and you will demand justice. In the house of the cavalier husband, you will love the cavalier lover. And of that you will give testimony and you will demand justice. And they will give you convent. In the brothel, you will say, "I have faith in the Lord." And you will love a cavalier. The foundations of the convent would tremble. Let the cavalier run from convent to brothel and from there to his house without ever finding you. You escaped into your own passion.
Mahi Magahite Bronvier. Young and beautiful woman that from 1666 to 1672 poisoned without malice and often with disinterestedness parents, friends, and servants. She even went to the hospitals and there administered poison to the sick. All of her crimes should be attributed to a horrible madness or to the most atrocious kind of deprivation, but not to the demon, as is frequently the case. It is true that Bronvier started her criminal career at 7 years old, and that superstitious spirits suspected that a horrendous devil had possessed her. 24 hours after being burned, in 1676, the people looked at her bones as relics, saying that she was a saint, for the poisoning continued after her death.
You escaped in your own passion. Of solidarity, nobody, married and sold from ourselves. There was no bread for us at the table of man. And what will we do, Mother Abbess? What will we do? Nobody is our brother or sister.
of sorority only the convent? Let the cavalier wander as much as your madness. Don't whip your body in his refuge of your flight. Let him fall without house. Our hope is the ruin of houses. There you will emerge from your passion. And what will we do? What will we do?
Desirier. Madame Desirier decided to spend some months in a domain 4 leagues from Paris and was invited to choose the most beautiful room in the castle, with the exception of one room which was visited every night by a phantom. For a long time, Madame Desirier wanted to see a phantom, and despite all the raised objections, she installed herself in the haunted room. When the night arrived, she went to bed, picked up a book, as was her habit, read, and after having finished, put out the light and fell asleep. Shortly, she was awakened by a noise at the door that was poorly closed. Something opened the door, entered, walking heavily. Stretching out her hands, Madame Desirier grabbed 2 woolly ears and had the patience of holding them until the next morning. When it was discovered, the presupposed phantom was a great dog that thought the room was more comfortable to sleep in than the stables. In the abandoned world where we will wander, passion will be one object and exercise. Don't call me sister until this world comes to ward off possibilities of new convents. In the debris, we shall find brothers, those who have lost nothing and by nothing were crushed, for they didn't have houses. But let us guard ourselves still, for the brothers will say, you made the citizens, now the city is ours. 3 times they will betray us, our brothers, in bread, in body, and in the city. Don't arm me, cavalier, with your anguish. We would retake from the debris ancient phantoms. We will return to the root of our anguish alone until we say our children, our people, and not Phallosus of our machos. We shall call the children, children, the women, women, and the men, men. We shall call the poets to govern the city. That substitutes the demiurge of cycloptic works. How is love possible? How is it not possible? Which is more important? The history of a love or a love in history? In a story? Today I want to speak of cruelty. Only of mine. Sisters, I want to speak of cruelty. Of that which I use day by day, even with myself, even as punishment, as a cloak. Serene cruelty, every day, in which I undress, with which I undress. I dress up, I proceed, with indifference, rigorous. For all rigor before men will be insufficient, and it is necessary to tell them this. They will no longer take us like warriors took castles in victory, making them habitable not only with law, sword, but also with wine. Their rigor is sufficient. Woman, sustainer of man, his reflection, his land, his inherited estate. They will accuse us of secret things, the 3 of us. We will frighten them in our refusal to be imprisoned. Falcons will light, although chained to our gloves, defended in our covered hands. Did I not say today I could speak of cruelty? A man lives with me and causes me conflict, and I breathe, I even desire the pain of the vice, the love, never allowing him to direct me, distract me, destroy me. As mothers, we three, mothers of men and not of rivers, nor of stones, nor of women. Responsibilities we have and we know to not bring up pansies or sailors, for that matter, in a country historied and formed, a country owned by sailors, by navigators. We will give them sons, yes, but generated by our wishes, by our deliverance, and never for self-affirmation or life work. We refuse to use them as bridges for our desires or distresses. Fragile they are. Even so, men in their yearnings, their fears, their arrogance, their false docility, fragile they are in their various attempts at disguise, to challenge bulls in public squares, in their race cars, and their body-to-body fights. Oh, my Portugal, of machos, deceiving impotence, coverers, stallions, such bad lovers, so hurried in bed, only caring to show supremacy. We must be tougher, more cruel, more rigorous. They will call us lesbians for this. They will have us as their women only in body, but not in will. Distasteful. We need men, but not these men. Mariana's Lament. They take me for taken. Within me, I give them my breast and my convent for nothing. In absence I wore, so absent I wore. They take me for none, conforming, conformed. I inhabit the habit by habit. In absence I walk, so absent I walk. By law I'm a prisoner, so well placed in donation I continue to keep myself free. Absence I walk, so absent I walk. They said I would die if I loved by myself, and they threaten me still with my sin. In absence I walk, so absent I walk. Now all I have left are the days I have lost, and the cloister I have not destroyed. In absence I walk, so absent I walk. Inevitably, we pass from love to history and politics, and to the myths that clothe the historical and political circumstances. And you ask, is this a pact with the devil which you suggest? It was not by chance, this question, as it is not by chance that the devil is a black man or red, ready to take feminine form in the dictionary of witchcraft. The devil is an angel who has fallen for having threatened the established superior order. We pass thus to the myths of the historical and political circumstances because it is not yet possible to speak of love Because in the relationship of two, man and woman, finding themselves alone and in their sexes, there is imposed, unbidden, inescapably, the obligations and restrictions of the society. Into a relationship of two, and not only in marriage, there exists the politically based model of oppression. Abelard is castrated, and Tristan never joins Isolde. And all the myths of love are given to us impeded and unrealized, and all the stories of love are stories of suicide, because we must return to the course of domination. We must dismantle its historical circumstances to destroy its roots. I understand, therefore, that it is not enough to think in terms of the relationships of production, being the woman, socially, the producer of children, and selling her work power to the man. It is necessary to grasp the kernel of the question, maybe even in its historical origin, that it is so distorted in the droning promotion of woman. But to this reading, it is necessary to add all the systems of cultural crystallization that still sustain, reinforce, justify, and amplify this domination of woman. And not only this domination, because an alteration of the economic and political situation in which we now stand does not necessarily bring about the destruction of all the cultural crystallizations in which the woman is the legal idiot, the social irresponsible, the castrated man, the flesh, the sinner, Eve of the serpent, the body without soul, the virgin mother, the witch, devoted mother, the vampire of men, the fairy of the home, and a stupid human being, and very ashamed of her sex, the bitch, the angel, etc., etc. To come back to the dispersed enumeration of the crystallized faces of the woman, only when we can know how to line them up according to axes and vectors will we be able to see the extent and profundity of that which hinders us all, women and men. Taking, for example, in one thread, the woman's body, where the hard sex of men is sucked and exhausted in the making of a sun treasure, the work of her body, the immortality in the other, body of a woman with its blood and cycles that tears itself in the body of another, the sun, mystery of life and death, the scandal of a body much too close to nature, that man tries to dominate, fearing always its vengeance, fear of the body, body of perdition, fear of being castrated by it, man erect and constructive, but who must have the woman to have sons, woman outlawed in what man rejects in his pragmatic choices. Feminine intuition, the eternal feminine vamp, ah, woman, it is to buy you that I work for centuries and make my laws, and you always flee from me. Body self-possessed, land of men, flesh of his flesh, Adam's rib, man making himself the mother of the woman to reorganize her origins, starting from chaos, woman power of temptation and the pact with disorder, power and scandal, feeling man's guilt, its marginal critic, its negative image. It comes from far, our fear and our dictatorship. Semi-divine portraits of our chiefs. In all this thread that I have hardly pulled, are soaked and mystified our politics, our ethics, our loves of two. Our loves of two, where men come to us after that horseback ride, present in their social image, destructive, bringing the emptiness that surrounds them, affirming themselves always against someone or something, erect not by themselves, but through the force of opposition, always blind and always alone in their soliloquy before us, that substitutes for dialogue with us impossible. Their emptiness says to us, my shadow of nothing. Their fear says to us, my root of everything. Will there come a time of love where two love each other without seeing each in mutual use and mutual abuse, and seek each other but for pleasure, and for pleasure alone, in giving and receiving? The Father. She was perverse. She slept naked, her breast free and calm, very white and exposed, with the nipples large, rosy, relaxed. During the day, she walked around the house with her blouse unbuttoned and sat every which way with the facts always intimated along her thighs. A suggestion between her legs of a soft darkness half hidden. She was perverse. She would lie on the sofa, her arms thrown over her head, and she would stay like that, smoothly, within reach, without evil, running her sharp tongue over her already moist lips. She was perverse. She was dark blonde, downy skinned, with eyes of hard blue, always sleepy. She was perverse. She would wrap her arms around his neck, her breasts pressing against his chest, her warm breath like satin, rubbing his mouth softly as if her lips were numb with saliva. She was perverse. She would leave the door ajar, forgotten while she undressed slowly, discovering her soft belly, thin shoulders, slowly in little movements, in secret sounds and pacts with childhood. She was perverse. Her hair was always uncombed and warm with sleep when she absent-mindedly kissed him in the morning. She was perverse. She slept naked, her breasts free and calm, very white and exposed, with the nipples large, rosy, relaxed. When the man entered the room, he hesitated, looking at her, staring at her in her sleep. But soon he advanced silently and quietly stopped beside the bed, hesitating again. Then he stretched out one hand, sliding it over the smooth curve of her breast, over the warm hips, sweet, the hard fingers already coming into her satin pubic hair. He bends over her, she awakens. Covers her mouth with his hand, strong, brutally keeping her down firmly underneath his body now lying on top of her. She was perverse. Her laughter was free, thirsty, and she looked at people with a kind of intimacy, a maddening odor spreading slowly like a fruit, obsessive, obsessively, obsessively. Indifferent, Mariana feels him come out from inside her, dirtying her with sperm outside also. She sees him get up, get dressed in a hurry, and go away without looking at her. All the time mute, even when he had forced her, mute, even when he had her. Surrendered, drowned in that torpor from which she wants never to emerge, each moment more deeply lost. You have to leave this house, he said in a neutral monotone. We cannot continue to live here together in the same house after what's happened. It's you who are guilty of everything. You know very well that it's you who are guilty of everything. I'm a man. I'm a man, and you are provocative. Perverse. You are perverse. A woman without shame, without modesty. I never want to see you again. You disgust me. You make me sick to my stomach. You make me ashamed of you. You knew, I know you knew what you were doing to me. I am a man, my whore. Of course I'm a whore. You can rest assured, Father. I'm a whore. Big bitch! The mother called her as she walked toward the door, toward the street, gripping the walls to keep from falling. Bitch! Big bitch!
This is WBAI-FM in New York City, and you're listening to All Night Sunday with the Radio On, Women on Trial, performed by Carol Cole, Tammy Grimes, and Zoe Caldwell. The production was presented one night only at Circle in the Square Theater and was billed as the first international feminist protest action, and it took place January 28th. It was directed by Gilda Giraud, and we'll continue with the second part of it. We apologize for the buzz, but that's the way it was recorded, and we have no control over that, and we thought since it was a one-time-only production, and because the information in it is so excellent and important, that we should play it for you. You are listening to Women on Trial. Carol Cole, Tammy Grimes, and Zoe Caldwell reading from the forbidden texts of the three Marias, who are now on trial for having written the new Portuguese letters.
Monologue of a woman called Maria to her patron. Thank you very much. This will pass. It is not necessary to call the doctor, madame. This will pass. I'm used to it. These attacks come to me and I stay like this without consciousness, without strength. And afterwards I come to myself feeling good again. You can rest assured, don't